center and coming in is Lube. Hulebeck centered it. McDonald scores! Matty McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
And he's stopped by Markstrom from point blank range.
Here goes, put it in the win column!
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get this hour going. It is Friday, April 5th. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It says Steinberg along with you, and it's time to get things going on the Eric Francis Hour. The Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Hey, live standardbred racing is back. Fridays at 2:15 and Saturdays at 12:45 at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly. It must be springtime, even though it doesn't look like it, if the standardbreds are back at Century Downs. Welcome to this hour. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's say hello to Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, the star of the Eric Francis Hour. Hello, EF. How are we doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. It's good to be back doing this. We did not have an Eric Francis Hour last week on Good Friday, and it is good to be back in the saddle, my friend. And we've kind of got the last kind of easy game to get up for of the year, hey, with the Flames being mathematically eliminated and playing out the string. This is kind of that last one circled on the calendar. Round four, Battle of Alberta, Saturday night. You certainly hope that inside that locker room, that's the way it's being looked at too, like a real opportunity to go out and make a statement to yourself. And, you know, we were both there for the last time they played, the 6-3 win at Rogers Place in Edmonton about a month ago. Go and play another game like that. And I think that would that'd be a nice positive to take for yourself down the string here. I'm curious what we see on Saturday night.
I'm always curious every time the Battle of Alberta comes, especially since, 3 years ago, Matthew Tkachuk took it to a whole new level. But, you know, I don't think anybody would disagree that, you know, it's a bit of a mismatch these days. At least it should be. The Oilers are a cup contender, and the Flames are out of the playoffs by a considerable margin. You know, yet every time they play, I think Flames fans, correct me if you think I'm wrong, Flames fans, I think, cringe and think, oh, God, we're going to get spanked because of what Flames fans saw in the playoffs a couple of years ago. And I think that stings. It resonates for years, but just the ability for them to stomp on the Flames if their game is in order. But the Flames always, you know, this rivalry is so great. And, you know, they had such a great outing when we were in Edmonton last time. And so that gives hope that, you know, the slate is clean. And you're right. What a great way to kind of end the season. I know there are some more games on top, but for the fans, this is probably the last big one that really matters. And a real good showing would be, I think, go a long way for the fans. And I think just for the feeling in this dressing room here in Calgary.
So who do you think should start in net? It's the final Battle of Alberta of the season. They've got Jacob Markstrom, and they've got Dustin Wolf, who got the start in Winnipeg on Thursday in that 5-2 loss to the Jets. What say you, sir? I guess there's a couple different ways we can go, right? We can go the route of what way we think the Flames are going to go, or what way we think they should go. What about you? Where do you want to start that conversation?
Well, I think it's a fascinating conversation. And I know most people say, well, who cares? The season's over. What does it matter? Just play the young kid. Hey, I think they're going to play Markstrom. That's my guess as to what I think they will do. In terms of what I think they should do, man, I think you framed it well. It is such an interesting debate. Jacob Markstrom has lost his last 7 games in a row, dating all the way back to that playoff debacle a couple of years ago to the Oilers. Mm-hmm. 7 starts in a row against the Oilers. He is 0-7 and with some horrific numbers along the way. And I remember at the beginning of the season after, so last season when the season started in Edmonton, if you recall, I think Flames had an opening game here in Calgary. Then the second game was in Edmonton. and he started Dan Vladar. And, this is a coach who you knew was going to start Markstrom 60-plus games, and yet game two against clearly the kryptonite of Jacob Markstrom, he started Dan Vladar. And I think that kick-started in some way the spiral of a season that Jacob Markstrom had. I'm not blaming Sutter for doing that, but I think that was just an awful way to start the season. I do believe Markstrom was ill or a little under the weather for the opening night, so they gave him that night off. But either way, I thought just in terms of the way it looked like the organization was kind of trying to shield Jacob Markstrom from his kryptonite. Since then, he's only started three times against the Oilers, and he's 0-for-3. Is it important for him to kind of get that first win under his belt at some point? Or are you looking at like, well, he's probably going to get traded in the summer. What does it matter? Let's give the young kid a real, real test on Hockey Night in Canada on a Saturday night against the Oilers. Like, arguments can be made on both sides. I'm fascinated to see what they're going to do, but I really do think they're going to put in Markstrom.
I think you're right. I also think that they'll go Markstrom. I also think that that's the way they'll go. But I'm only like 55-45 on my guess. But I think they'll go Markstrom. I would go Wolf. I really would. Because it has less to do with, play all the young kids. It is more to do with, hey, this is a guy that is going to be a part of your immediate and long-term future. He is going to be in the NHL next year. I think that we can say that. And so the fact that he is going to be in the NHL next year and a full-time NHLer next year, I think it's important to really get some good evaluators down the stretch. And with no disrespect to Anaheim or San Jose or, hell, even Los Angeles, the way they play, are those the best evaluators? Or are the Winnipegs, Vancouver's, Edmonton's, are those the better ways to evaluate exactly what you've got in this guy? And I know that there's a chance Markstrom might be back next year. But you know what? I bet you game one or two of next season's against the Oilers, that's a great place for him to exercise a demon. Does it really matter?
Sure.
You can do it to start next season. You can give him that start if he's here to begin the year next year. Here's a real opportunity with nothing on the line or with nothing standings-wise on the line to give your guy a real chance at it. And the other thing is, Francis is coming off a hell of a start. I thought he was Calgary's best player in the loss to Winnipeg. I thought he was dynamite against the Jets. The only things that beat him were like super high-end chances that he had no shot on. He was very good in terms of rebound control. He stopped 40 of 44. I thought he kept the group in the game at times in the first and second period where Winnipeg really took over territorially. That was one of Wolf's best games that he's played. So, yeah, and in fact, maybe his best game that he's played. I was super impressed by him, too. So that's the other reason I think going back to Wolf would make a lot of sense.
I think you make a great argument, no question about it. I wouldn't even counter that. I think it's strong in every way. But the one thing I wanted to add, and I said this on the TV broadcast the other night, and I think it's important to say, because I think, 95% of the fan base here is hoping they'll start Wolf. And, everybody's been clamoring for Wolf all season long. And every time Markstrom starts, even when the games did matter, there were still a lot of people who were saying, no, Wolf should be up here. Wolf should be starting. And if he is here, he definitely should be starting. This guy, Jacob Markstrom, look, he's under contract for two more years. We know the situation. There's a very good chance he'll be traded in the summer, but there's also a chance he won't be. He has earned the right to be the starter till the end of this season. I think they'll go 50-50 from now to the end of the season, and I think that's the way to do it. He's earned that right, and I think that it's pretty disrespectful if at this point in time you just yank him. I think he would see it as very disrespectful. Let me put it that way. And I think the relationship is an important one because he holds all the cards here, right?
Yep.
He's the one who would have to waive his no trade. If this organization says, look, we're ready to finally make the trade, we want to move you, he could say, okay, but I'm going to give you a real small list of teams I'm willing to go to. Hmm. Or he could play ball and say, listen, I'll give you 10 teams that I'll go to. I think that this relationship has to be managed right to the very end. And that includes giving him the respect he deserves as the guy who is unquestionably the MVP of this team this season, So people need to keep that in mind. It's easy to just clamor for Wolf, but there's so many more things at play with management and the coach when they're deciding their goalies from now to the end of the season. It's not as simple as everyone is going, we'll give the young kid the keys from now to the end of the season. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I honestly, I do agree with that. I don't think, and that's why when we got the news that Dan Vladar was going to be done for the season, I believe that there were 14 games remaining. It was a Thursday, and I think there were 14 games to go going into that game against Vancouver on a Saturday night. And I remember talking with Wes, and our big feel was, hey, you know, what about 7-7? Could you do 7 for Wolf, get him to 15 starts, and also do 7 for Jacob? I think that the 7 for Jacob satisfies exactly what you're talking about. Because I've never been of the opinion, because I think you're right. Like, you do have a balance to strike here. Jacob Markstrom has been your team MVP. He's earned the right to play games. He's earned the right to get in there. And he is an important part of your team. An important part of your locker room culture as well. So I don't think just sidelining him and banishing him and playing him twice between, you know, in the final 14 games would have made any sense. So I'm not of the opinion that you just don't play Markstrom again. I just think this one against Edmonton's a really cool opportunity to get him in. And then you have an opportunity to go back to Jacob Monday against Tuesday against San Jose. So I just, based on the way Wolf played against Winnipeg and based on this being the biggest test, I think, for the Flames between now and the end of the regular season, with no disrespect to Vancouver, more so because Edmonton is such a high-end rival of the team, I just think it's a cool opportunity to get Wolf into that type of high-leverage action. That's all.
Yep, no argument here. No argument here. I think the fans would really welcome him with a big, big cheer when he skated on the ice. I think people would be really excited about that.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see which way they decide to go on the goaltending front for Saturday night against Edmonton. Let me ask you this, though. How surprised are you that we're going to be talking about Martin Pospisil suiting up for that game Saturday against Edmonton? Because I think you were very much along the same lines as me in that, hey, This feels like history, what happened a month ago, what we saw last night, Thursday against the Jets. It felt like, hey, that feels like it's going to be a suspension. I thought, yeah, you know what? Recent history, repeat offender, I guess. That's going to be a suspension. I was a little surprised when the news started trickling out that there wasn't going to be a hearing for Martin Pospisil.
Yeah, I just put a tweet out saying, you know, Craig Conroy told me that there's no supplemental discipline. And he kind of asked me, why, did you think there would be? Like as if, you know, like as if I should be surprised. Listen, I think there's a couple things at play. First of all, I think he is lucky that he dodged another suspension. I really do think that he's lucky, especially because it's just a month after, you know, the last suspension. It was a reckless hit. And you can get the Zapruder film out there and start splitting the screens. The Flames have dissected this, and at the moment of impact, his arm is right by his side. But if you go one frame further, within a split second, the elbow is in Josh Morrissey's chin. So whether he initiated the hit with the elbow or it just came up. And I do think, I really do believe that Pospisil, it was a little bit of a defensive move. At the last second, he was bracing himself for the hit, and he got the elbow up. To me, it was a five-minute major, and I know that the coach took exception to the way that it was handled by the officials on the ice, and that's a whole other thing. I do think that maybe him getting kicked out of the game maybe saved him from a suspension, because they always take that into account, right? If a guy misses like half a game, if he misses about a half a game, then they're like, yeah, you know what? He kind of served his time. Message sent. The other thing is, you know, and what's obviously radically different from the Vince Dunn situation is, you know, Josh Morrissey got right back up and was on the bench, you know, was on the ice for the next shift. And I think on top of it, I was waiting for the hue and cry from Rick Bowness after the game. And also from Josh Morrissey and his teammates to talk about how disgusting it was. You remember the strong words from Dave Hakstol when those two hits happened against Seattle by Pospisil. He said it was garbage and there's no room for that crap or whatever he said. But here's what Josh Morrissey said. You know, he talked to Ken Wiebe after the game, and I was waiting for these quotes after the game because I think that what the player has to say, the victim has to say, is important too. And he said, in the moment, I didn't feel like it was dirty. I just got smoked, and it was my fault. It's part of the game. But when I watched it after, he kind of extends the elbow. Thankfully, it just kind of grazed my chin. And that's important, right, that it only grazed his chin. If the league sees it and it's a square-on hit, I think that it's a different story too. He went on to say, obviously, he's got a history, and the elbow was the part I feel was the reckless part of it. The league will look at it. He's got a couple of suspensions, and he's a young guy in the league, so it's not the best to be losing money like that. So that's a kind of a mild reaction from a real classy Calgarian, Josh Morrissey, who said basically, no harm, no foul-ish. And I think the league looks at that too. I think they take all that into consideration. I just think it would have been an easy opportunity for the league to just reiterate to this kid that he's just way too close to the line. That's the fourth time he's been kicked out of a game this year.
And third since the All-Star break.
And how many games did he play this season? Like 53 or something like that? He knows. We all know. He's got to be just a little more careful. But he also knows that if he's not borderline reckless, he's not an NHL player. So it's an interesting dance that we're going to watch for a bunch of years. But we were at this point, Pat, with Matthew Tkachuk early in his career.
Yeah, that's come up a couple times on the text line. And I hadn't thought of that. I think that's a really good comparison.
I'll never forget being in a press conference. I think we were in Buffalo, and it was just before game time, and Brad Treliving was going to address the fact that Matthew Tkachuk had been suspended. And I think it was for that. It was a really weak suspension. He shoved this tough guy off the ice. It wasn't anyway. The long story of it was kind of a soliloquy from Treliving standing in front of Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah, like his father. Saying,
yeah, it was. And it was a really interesting moment, basically saying, this is a teaching moment for my player behind me and for this organization to understand that you walk the line and you're going to cross it from time to time, but it's all about reining it in. Anyway, I think Tkachuk has done a damn good job over the years. Nobody straddles the line probably more than him. And how many suspensions has he had? I think only the one, maybe two, not many. And so, you know, lesson learned. And, I know Fred Conroy's talked to him about it several times. When he was kicked out of the game in Boston, I was walking down after the game with Conroy coming out of the elevator from the press box, and Pospisil walked by, and Conroy goes, I don't want to, tell tales out of school, but he's basically, hey, Pos, did you get him? Like, what happened there? Like, do I got to worry about this? Are you going to get suspended? And they went off and had a private conversation, but it was funny that he needed to hear from Pospisil if Pospisil was going to say, yeah, I'm in trouble on this one.
I want to play you a couple things. First of all, here's what my thought was. I thought it was an elbow. Especially after watching back this morning, I definitely did not think that Pospisil meant to do it. I actually think that he was going for a hit, then realized it could be bad, and maybe tried to avoid it or tried to minimize damage. But I definitely didn't think he meant to deliver an elbow to Josh Morrissey's face. For sure,
yeah,
I don't think
I agree
he meant
that.
To. So I thought, my take would normally be, you know what, five in a game, that probably covers it, let's move on. But the only reason I thought there might be a suspension, and I said this on postgame, is that he's on their radar. I was fully expecting a suspension because of what happened a month ago and because this is a guy that, they clearly have had some sort of eye on. And so that's what I was expecting. If that was Eric Francis, well, no, he's a dirtbag. Not him. But if that was another player on the ice.
I'd be guilty for sure, yeah.
if that was somebody else, I would have thought to myself, yeah, you know what, bad hit, five in a game, move on, he'll be back next game. Like, especially because Morrissey wasn't hurt, but because it was Pospisil and because he's already been suspended and kicked out of three games in recent memory, I was thinking maybe they might crack down a little bit harder. You know, it's funny. Let me play you a couple things. This was Adam Lowry of the Winnipeg Jets earlier on Friday. So after the game, Lowry got caught by Kevin Rooney later on in the game as well, had to leave. Yeah. He's fine. Lowry's fine, but was asked about that. He was asked about that hit, but look at the way that he spun it.
Honestly, I'm not worried about my hit. That play happens. I think there could be a minor penalty on it, but that one's fine. I think the Pospisil one's an entirely different category. You know, he leaves his feet, drives up right into JMO's head. I think, you know, it's his third major penalty in 2 months, so you know, at some point the league needs to do something.
So apparently Calgary's Adam Lowry disagrees with Calgary's Pat and Calgary's Eric.
Yeah, it's well, no, I mean, I think that I feel the same way. I think it should have been looked at a little closer, but you know, again, when talking to Conroy, their view of it was that when he made contact,
yes,
his right foot was off the ice, but his left was on the ice.
Yes.
And I agree with you. I think it was more of a defensive thing. I think at the last second, he's like, oh, God, I got to protect myself. And the natural reaction to bring your elbows up. Still, the damage was done. He hit him in the face and with his elbow, obviously a two-minute penalty. I guess we could sit here, Pat, and say this. If Morrissey's lying on the ice and doesn't finish the game, we're having a completely different conversation. But that's understood, right? Like, you'd agree with that, right?
That is the MO of the NHL, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. So, but he wasn't hit. And as Morrissey said, he was only grazed on the chin. So there you go. It wasn't as bad as it probably looked on film. And obviously, everyone's got their own version of it, but you know, I think, man, is Adam Lowry a classy guy? I love that he didn't take exception to what Rooney, you know, that incident, because it was not intentional. Kevin Rooney's not that guy.
Neither is Chris Rooney, I don't think.
Chris. I always get those two mixed up. The referee. Rooney wasn't. It wasn't doing it intentionally. And if the referee Rooney was on the ice, he wouldn't have called the penalty either. So there you go.
I also want to play you this because Ryan Huska did address this with us on Friday morning as well, and talked a little bit about the hit and also about Martin Pospisil. So I want to play you this, and we can react to that as well, because again, I think what you'll hear from head coach Ryan Huska, very similar to when you chatted with Craig earlier today, just about the principal point of contact and where his feet were. This was Ryan Huska from Friday morning.
We have the ability to slow everything down, as everybody does with video. And the point of contact, he's got feet on the ice and his arm is down by his waist. Now you can bump it ahead one frame and it looks like his arm might get a little bit higher, but the point of contact, he's on the ice and his arm is lower. So with Marty, we don't want to have him change the way he plays. It's just a matter of making sure that he's on the line, not over the line, because he's too important of a player for our team right now to be missing time sitting in the penalty box for one, or missing a game, you know, because of a suspension or something like he just came off of. So he's a driver on our team, and it's important for him to recognize that we need to have him around, play the same way, but on the line, not over it.
How do you deliver that message? Because I would imagine that's a tough thing to do, to straddle the line but not go over it. Like, what's key in delivering that message?
Yeah, I think you continue your conversations with him. I think that's important. But I also think it comes with maturity and playing in the league a little bit longer, where he'll recognize certain situations where I can go right through this guy, or maybe I have to slow up a touch in this situation. But the fine line for me is he is who he is, and he needs to play the game a certain way, and it's just making sure that he continues to work on that side of it.
Sorry, people are going to look at the latest one and say he was suspended a month ago, but have you seen effort to toe that line a little bit better in the past 4 weeks?
For sure. I mean, absolutely. He's like, there's nights on in our games where he's had 7 to 10 hits in a game, and none of them over the last month have been ones where you're like, ooh, that's a bad hit. So he's still doing a job of finishing his hits. He's trying to play hard. He's trying to be first on the forecheck, which we want him to do, all those things. So the last night would probably be the first time that you can even remotely question one of the hits.
So that was Ryan Huska and talking about a lot of the things you, first of all, on the hit, and then Francis on the player going forward. There's a lot to sink your teeth into with this guy, because I don't think he's anywhere near as effective if he's not playing on the line. If he is not that guy where he has to straddle it, and if he's not that guy having other players on the opposing team trying to chase him down and get out of their own structure to go after him, like, he's not as effective a player, right?
That's right. But, you know, with that, obviously, you gain a reputation. Listen, a guy like Cal Clutterbuck, everyone around the league knows this guy hits everything that moves. I don't think people think he's necessarily dirty, but with the amount of hitting he does, eventually you're going to cross the line or have something that's not going to look so good. But I don't think he has a reputation like a guy like, say, Nick Cousins does, for being someone who people around the league are going, yeah, he's got a reputation. I heard those exact words today being spoken on the Jeff Merrick's podcast, for example, about Martin Postlesil. He goes, this guy is starting to get quite a reputation. And that's damaging, and it's totally fair. But the point is, for a guy who's only played 50-something games in the National Hockey League, there are already a percentage of people around the league who know who he is based on his borderline hits that he's been involved in. So, less than 99% of his hits are clean. He's leads the team in hits, but these things are going to happen. So, I would argue this. He's the most entertaining player on the Calgary Flames right now. Like, and I think some people say, what are you talking about? Like, what about a guy like Kadri or a guy like Kuzmenko with the skill set they have? And I do think that those two guys are entertaining as well, too. But you talk about fans coming to the rink and wanting to get excited about a player. I really think a guy like Pospisil is at the top of the list right now. Do you think that's way off?
I am always interested in what he's going to do, and that's why I was a little bummed out, Francis, that we weren't going to, because I just assumed he was going to get suspended. I really did. And again, it was less about the hit and more about the player and more about the reputation, as you're just talking about. So I was kind of bummed out we weren't going to see him in the Battle of Alberta. And now we are. And I know that the BOA has lost a little luster since Matthew's been gone. Well, a guy like Pospisil is a guy that can then add a little more juice to it. And the Oilers are going to be out for blood after what happened last time, and we know Blake Coleman delivered that hit on Connor McDavid and all that type of stuff. Boy, I'm selfishly quite excited that Pospisil's going to be in the lineup on Saturday.
When I sat down to write my column last night, and I started, you know, in the second period after the Pospisil hit, I knew my whole column was going to be about, you know, this latest debate or whatever you want to call it. My original lead was, well, the Battle of Alberta just got a little less interesting. And then I thought, no, I'm not going to put that right at the top because he may not get suspended. Who knows? Anyway, the sentiment, I'm echoing the sentiment you had, which is, man, I spent 20 minutes talking to Pospisil about the Battle of Alberta earlier this week. My plan today was to write a column about him going into the Battle of Alberta. But then when he did what he did last night, I said, well, I can't write about Pospisil because he probably won't be in the game Saturday. Anyway, now we find out he will be, and that's great news for everybody.
Yep. Eric Francis with us. We are underway on this week's Eric Francis Hour every Friday here on Flames Talk. Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. The Eric Francis Hour is brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live standardbred racing is back Fridays at 2:15 and Saturdays at 12:45 at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's a Friday, so the Eric Francis Hour continues. Steinberg along with you from the Scotiabank Saddledome, and Eric from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, wherever Eric is. I'll give you his exact address one day, but not today. Promise I won't do that today. Can you imagine? What a thing to do. Hey, what'd you think of Connor Zeri being a healthy scratch on Thursday night in Winnipeg? What was your initial reaction to that decision?
So I wasn't bothered by it. I think Husker's explanation today was, in a nutshell, the reason why I think he was hired here. Like, he's just so such a great communicator. I don't know if you want to play the clip where it was basically him just saying, you know, I don't believe in just giving free ice to people because they're young. You got to earn that. And I thought that was really well put. I think it's easier to keep him in the lineup, but I think he did the right thing. You know, I think he can easily justify it. Because really, let's be honest, Zari's been invisible since he's come back. Invisible is a little strong, but he hasn't been the player, the impact player that I think people in Calgary got so excited about earlier this season. Yes, he still holds on to the puck more than most players, and in an effective way for the most part, in an effort to try and make plays. But other than that, I don't think you really noticed a whole lot from him. So I don't think it's bad for a guy to get a reset and also understand the gravity of the situation. Like, you know, don't ever take your foot off the pedal. And you know what? It's interesting because all the conversations I had with Connor early this season, you know, 10, 20 games in, when, you know, everyone was talking about him in town, holy cow, who saw this coming? Every single one of them, he talked about how he talks daily with his family, and it's all about being grounded and making it like every game is your last game or every game is your first game. That's kind of how Husker put it today. And that's always been his mantra, that never, ever take a night off. And I'm not suggesting he's forgotten that for a second, because I think this kid's so grounded and mature and confident. But I think that whatever's ailed him really slowed him down and kind of changed the way he's approached the game since. So I don't know if the injury lingers or if he's just having a harder time kind of rebounding from it. But either way, he hasn't been the same player. And so I don't have a problem with the coach deciding to kind of drive that point home and say, you've got to be a better player.
My initial reaction was I didn't like it. And that was before hearing the coach speak the day after. I was just like, man, he's only been back for 5 games and he missed 8 with an upper body injury. And this is a lot to ask for a rookie to jump back in and get back up to pace at this time of year. And I thought, you know what, he'll figure it out and let him figure it out. And so I was like, at first I was like, nah, I don't like it. But then when I heard from Ryan Huska the day after, Friday morning inside the Flames locker room, and he talked about a few things, you know, talked about how we felt like he needed the mental reset, and he's a different guy for us because they see how important he is for them going forward, and there's a belief that him finishing the season strong is really important. And all of those things, they said, no, we really wanted to give him this mental reset and sit him down for one, let him take a breather so that it gives him a better opportunity in their eyes, or they believe there's a chance it'll give him a better opportunity to then finish the season, the final 6 games, in a really positive way. So when I heard that, I was like, yeah, okay. You know, I can kind of get behind that. And then the stuff that you just talked about how, look, nobody's getting free games and all that. Yeah, that resonated as well. So he'll be back in Saturday against Edmonton. There's no doubt about this. This isn't going to be a healthy scratch for the rest of the season type situation. This isn't going to be Jacob Pelche last year when we were all wondering when Pelche was finally going to get back in the lineup. This is a one-game thing where he was sat out, got a breather, and now he'll come back in and see how he responds to it. So, you know, a little sober second thought and listening to the coach speak after the fact, I think I can understand it a little bit more. Because one thing that is very clear, he has struggled since returning. There's no doubt. He has not been the impact guy he was prior to the injury. You can't argue that.
No, and, you know, as a coach, when you want to try to get it, not that they couldn't get the point through. I'm sure they spoke to him endlessly throughout the handful of games that he came back for and wasn't effective, about how he needs to be, you know, what he needs to do to be more effective. And I just think the crucial thing that he said, today was, this isn't a punishment, you know, and certainly the player wouldn't take it as a punishment at all. It was just, hey, we need to hammer home the point. You need to be better, and we've told you what you need to do to be better. You know it. And so one game off, and I bet you next game you'll try a little harder to be that player that you want to be. So I have no problem with it.
Let's finish off the Eric Francis Hour talking about Oliver Shillington, who is indeed, and I don't think there's any surprise. I think the way that you put it in your headline was he was the sure choice to be the Bill Masterton Memorial Trophy nominee for the Calgary Flames this year. You, as a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, get to help decide who the Flames nominee is going to be in any given year, and this one couldn't have been much of a debate at all. Eric, this one seemed pretty cut and dried, hey?
Well, it's just such a great story, isn't he? And I think this award actually allows the organization, or, you know, all of us to kind of trumpet, you know, the triumph that is his story at this point in time. I think it's just so great. So I thought, you know, he had a very humble response. I listened to his interview with you guys today. You know, I chatted with him the other day, of course, and I had a long chat with him on the road last time we were on the road, about just how grateful he is for the little things in life. I thought it was interesting. He said, you know, just to see the flight attendants again, you know, the team flight attendants, you know, he's just so happy to see familiar faces and be surrounded by so much love and support. And what struck me the most from the interview that I did with him, with a couple others the other day, when we told him about the award that we'd given to him, or the nomination that we'd given to him, was, you know, players tapping him on the, you know, you've seen this a couple of times, right? Where before a game, a guy will kind of settle up to him at the center line and give him a stick tap and a few encouraging words, basically welcome back or good for you or I'm proud of you or whatever it is they say. He said he never expected that. So the opponents, he said, half of them he knows, half of them he has no idea who they are, but they just did it because, well, they felt strongly about showing respect and support to him. So I think that's really cool. When an opposing team player seeks you out on or off the ice to tell you that they're really happy and proud of you, I think that says it all. And I know the city feels the same way. City from day one has always felt really proud that this guy is able to come back through some, you know, to this break that one day he'll speak a little more about. But neat story, neat guy. And, you know, he really is doing his part. Not that he has to. And I always wondered if he would, but he's doing something to help others just by speaking out a little bit about his story. Even if he doesn't ever tell his whole story, just by talking about his need for mental help, I think, you know, is all part of this great job society's done for the last, 10 years, kind of making it a whole lot easier for people to just say, you know what, I need help.
Yeah, and I think that was maybe the biggest takeaway, because I had the opportunity to listen to that same chat that he had with everybody on Monday at Winsport, when you all let him know that he was going to be the Masterton nominee, and listening to him then, and then having him sit here with us in the Hot Stove Lounge and go through things. The thing that keeps on sticking out to me is just the, when he talks about how he had to kind of get to a point where he had to accept that things weren't okay, and like accept that he was in a really bad spot, as opposed to running from it or being in denial about it, and how much that kind of really changed everything and allowed him to start kind of walking through it. And I just I think it's a really powerful message, Eric. Just like, man, like that's, everybody goes through something crappy in their life and different extent. And he's been very, very clear in saying that everybody's journey is individual and personal. But I mean, the realization that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to reach out and get help. And it's okay to lean on the support systems that were there. And his support system was the Calgary Flames organization, or one of them was the Calgary Flames organization. And first Brad Treliving, then Craig Conroy, teammates, everybody. Like, it's okay to use that support when you need it, right? I think it's a really important message that here is a professional athlete who excels at his craft like 0.1% of the human population does, and he's okay admitting that, yeah, he really needed help and needed to lean on a lot of different things for a while. I think it's really important.
And with every player who does, you know, who leans on organizations, on a league, on friends, family, professionals for help, it makes it a little bit easier for someone else to finally realize that that's probably the best course of action for them too. And, you know, I cite how many players have we been reading about who've entered the player assistance program over the last 5-6 years? You know, I mean, it's just more and more every year. And I think for a lot of guys, that's probably the scariest part is letting the world know that you need help. It's one thing to seek assistance privately and no one else knows about it. It's another to declare openly, I need to get away from the game and I need full-time help. There's a stigma that I think is really disappearing on that front. So, you know, and Oliver Shillington is a part of helping remove that stigma, which is really great.
You excited for Saturday night?
I'm excited for Saturday night. I just wanted to throw one more last thing in there.
Oh, yeah.
Landon DuPont.
Oh, yes. You know, I have that written down. I wanted to make sure we did touch on that. Yeah, let's finish there.
I tweeted out there yesterday that Landon DuPont is going to be given exceptional status on Monday at a press conference, Hockey Canada, Western Hockey League. Second player in WHL history to get such status behind Connor Bedard. So it's a pretty good company. Connor McDavid's had this in the past. John Tavares.
Jason Spezza.
Aaron Ekblad. It's amazing to me that people don't really kind of understand what that means. And I guess because it is so rare, he's 14 years old. And I watched this kid at the Circle K tournament this year with my son. We went and watched a whole bunch of games, went and talked to him after every game, talked to his dad, Mickey DuPont. They're a great family. He's a great kid. Mickey's a phenomenal human being, a very successful, smart guy. He's handled his son so well. This is a unicorn, right? This rarely happens ever. He's a defenseman. He's size is going to be an issue. He only started playing contact hockey last year. And now, next year, he's going to be roaming with Giants in the Western Hockey League playing against 20-year-olds. So it's a phenomenal story. People are going to know more and more about his story. You know, I've been fascinated to hear about the panel that was assembled by Hockey Canada to go through his process. It involved a psychiatrist. They want to make sure this kid is set up for success, not failure, because there's a lot of pressure to put on a 14-year-old kid. I mean, my son's 13, and I just try to picture him being in this situation a year from now, and it's unfathomable. So, but I can tell you, as someone who's watched this kid play a handful of times, he is that good. He is just the most special player I've ever watched, obviously, at that age, and I'm just so excited for him. So Monday, there'll be even more details on it, but at the end of the day, he's a Calgary kid. We all should be very proud of him. He's not eligible for the draft until 2027, and we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. Who knows what could happen? Some of the kids have been given exceptional status in the past, haven't even made it to the NHL. But the reality is this kid deserves it, and I think everyone in this city should get behind him and really support him, especially when he comes back and plays against the Hitmen next year.
Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy. We'll see you Saturday morning for the final BOA morning skate, and hopefully we get ourselves a good little game between the Flames and Oilers on Saturday night. Great stuff, as always, EF. Always love the hour. Thanks for doing it, man.
Looking forward to tomorrow, my man. Thanks for the chat. I always enjoy it. Thanks.
He is Eric Francis, and that is the Eric Francis Hour as we start to wrap things up on Flames Talk this hour. The Eric Francis Hour is brought to you, as always, by Horse Racing Alberta. Live standard bred racing is back Fridays at 2:15 and Saturdays at 12:45 at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.